This TFMR podcast is brought to you by your friends at JM Bullion. Visit jmbullion.com for all your gold and silver bullion needs. Well, happy Friday, everybody. It is Friday, May the 17th, and this is your Friday podcast. As I mentioned yesterday, I'm going to be traveling and out of my office all day, really, here on Friday, going to a special event. So I won't have time to record a weekly wrap-up podcast. I'll put some charts and COT comments and stuff into the comment section of this thread, but this is your podcast. We're actually recording it on Thursday, so we're a little bit handicapped here, but I got some stuff I want to discuss that is going to be timeless. It is not dependent upon which day we're recording. And the stuff we're going to discuss is the COT report and China and silver and the mining sector. And hands down, the best person I can talk to about that is my old friend Denver Dave, Dave Kranzler. You find him at investmentresearchdynamics.com. He is the author of Short Sellers Journal and Mining Stock Journal. And like I said, he's a dear old friend, even though he's a Broncos fan. Dave, thank you. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me on again, Craig. I have a serious question to ask you.
Oh, God.
Speaking of timeless, whatever happened to Turd Ferguson?
Well, he's still around. You go like on some of these websites, you pick your anonymous name, right? You sign up. Everybody here at TFMR has a pen name, whatever, you know.
Right.
So within the confines of this site, I use Turd Ferguson. I sign off all my posts with TF, that sort of thing. But as soon as I leave our little domain here, then I have to become Craig again. It's kind of superhero-ish in a way.
No, I understand.
You here would have to be Denver Dave, but then that would be a dead giveaway. So, as I was mentioning earlier, perhaps your proper screen name would be President of the Bo Nix Fan Club. Just put that.
You always have to get a jab in about the Broncos, don't you?
All right, here's the deal. As I just mentioned to everybody, we're recording this about noon Eastern on Thursday. You're listening to this Friday afternoon or Saturday. We don't know. We can't know where silver will close on Friday. So we can't know. We can speculate about the significance of, you know, what a close in certain levels might mean. But what we do know, and what I wanted to start with, Dave, was something that caught my eye last week, because I look at the COT reports every week, and I know you do too. And it almost feels like we've had a paradigm shift. I'm sorry, this is a long question. Nobody wants to hear me talk, but I got to set it up this way. You and I both watched the COTs for a decade plus, two decades or whatever in your case. And the way that the COMEX has always, it's the futures tail wagging the spot dog. And the COMEX is the price maker, and everybody has to deal with it. And the speculators flow in and price goes up, and then they run out of gas and the speculators flow out and the banks cover shorts and price goes down. And that's how it has always worked until now. And over the last 6-8 weeks of this rally, COT positioning by the speculators and the commercials hasn't changed. And yet silver price is up 20% and gold's up 10 or 15. So my question to you, Dave, finally, has the COMEX become a price taker, having to adjust off of what's going on someplace else in the world, like Shanghai? What do you think?
Ooh, that's a great question. I've been wrestling with that concept now for, I don't know. There was at some point earlier this year, and I can't pinpoint an exact date because I just don't remember, but it kind of felt, and it may have even been in December, it kind of felt like the COMEX was losing its ability when they pull the rug out and they flush the price, and it usually happens you know, it starts in London with the AM fix. And then when the COMEX opens, you get another flush, you know, like we had yesterday. And then they flush it again, if they can, going into the close of the COMEX floor, which would be 1:30 Eastern time. And I just happened to notice, and again, I think it was either in the fourth quarter last year or early this year, I started noticing, and we actually exchanged tweets about this earlier this year. There were several mornings when gold was actually rallying into the AM London fix.
Yeah.
And 90% of the time it gets flushed going into the AM fix.
Right.
So, and the AM fix is at 5 a.m. New York time. So, and then I also, you know, around that time or maybe a little bit later, it seemed like every time they tried to flush the price on the COMEX, it would bounce back. Maybe not right away, but within a day or two. And so, and that's when I started thinking, you know, something's shifting here. And the only thing I can connect it to is the enormous demand for physical gold and silver coming from the Eastern Hemisphere. You know, obviously China and India are the most notable, but now there's a lot of central banks over in the Eastern Hemisphere that are buying and accumulating gold. And I think it's taking, I wouldn't go so far as to say that COMEX is ultimately that they're strictly a price taker right now, but it certainly seems to be shifting. And the only way I can explain that is with the physical demand. And the difference between the COMEX, you know, when you know, hedge funds stand for delivery, it's just an accounting entry in the ledger, the computer ledger of the banks, right?
Right.
Oh yeah, well, we trust us, we have this silver in this vault, so we're gonna attach your name to it. Well, you know, there's probably 10 different names attached to the same bar. But
right.
When China or India, or now a lot of these central banks over in the Eastern Hemisphere are repatriating their gold from Western vaults, that gold and that silver has to be delivered, like physically delivered out of the vaults and to the end buyer or the end user, to the refinery, before it gets shipped further east from Switzerland, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so, and I think that's what we're seeing. I think, you know, it comes and goes, but you start hearing about tightness in the market over in London, you know, physical tightness. And, you know, one of the things that's interesting that I know you've noticed is that for, you know, starting earlier this year, the price of gold and silver kept going up, but supposedly the metal was flowing out of the ETFs, right?
Right. Yep.
And so, you know, and again, I don't really trust what they report to us, and I don't even trust the COT report, and I know you don't either, but I honestly think that you know, the banks have had to tap into SLV and GLD in order to make deliveries.
No doubt.
And I think that's, like, as you mentioned, the COT report hasn't changed that much for the last several weeks. It's kind of boring to watch now. And it looks like it should be set up for the traditional rug pull, price flush, you know, trigger the hedge fund sell stops, and put, you know, and that's when you get those fishing line chart formations.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
And like we had one in April, but
two.
And you know, we had, you know, and now we had one yesterday, but the market bounced back.
Yeah, they tried it on Mondays this week as well, and we're down $30 or whatever.
Right, and we were discussing it before we started recording. I mean, you've got the price in China for both gold and silver is quite a bit higher than the quote unquote world spot price.
Right.
And it's higher than the front month gold and silver futures contracts. So that kind of tells me that China, you know, in conjunction with the rest of the Eastern Hemisphere buyers, are becoming more, price makers, and the COMEX is becoming more of a price taker. It's not black and white yet, but it feels like we're headed in that direction.
Let me add some additional context here. Gold broke out of its 3+ year range Friday, March the 1st, about 2090. It's now $300 higher. On the COT report that was surveyed March the 12th, the broad category of large speculators, which I'm just going to use that as a broad category, was net long 201,600 contracts. Last Tuesday, May the 7th, again, gold's $300 higher. That category is net long 199,600 contracts. I mean, so prices moved 15%, and the net position of the large speculators, hedge funds, the rest, hasn't changed. Same thing in silver. Silver broke out a month ago. And if you go back, and silver's up 20%. Last Tuesday, May the 7th, now again, by the time you're listening to this, there's a new COT report, and I'll add some comments on that over the weekend. But you go back to when silver broke out in early April, the large speculators net long 53,200. Last week, net long 53,700. So it's not the same dynamic as it's always been. Here's where I'm going to then ask you this next question about this price maker ticker thing. You mentioned Shanghai. Again, we're recording this on Thursday. Earlier today, the price in Shanghai, dollar price in Shanghai, spot price was $32.50. The spot price, XAG USD, $29.50. So there's like a 10% premium there. Is it possible, as a price taker, if that's the case, the COMEX, the banks realize that maybe 10% is the maximum amount of spread they can allow to avoid a vault draining arbitrage? What do you think of that idea?
I think the Chinese know that what's reported in the COMEX vaults isn't necessarily what's in the vaults.
Well, that's true too. But is there
in London, though, for sure in London,
a safer way to say it, that a 10% arbitrage is just not quite wide enough to avoid a mass shipment of silver from west to east. And so therefore, as price in Shanghai keeps rising, they have to let the spot price that we recognize keep going up. So as, because if it goes to 10 bucks, well then, and again, to that point, Dave, and everybody here on this site knows I've been talking about this, in the last 4 years, spot silver has closed above $29 on a daily basis 5 times in 4 years. The fifth one was Wednesday the 15th. Every single time, the very next day, was a big, massive red candle to back under 29 to keep it from breaking out. Today, after closing at 29.65 yesterday and trying to go down, as we record this, it's 29.70. It's not a big red candle day. So again, I'm using this as all a background. I'm doing all the talking, but are we seeing but not recognizing a paradigm shift?
It's impossible to know for sure, right?
Yeah. We
will know for sure looking back at some point in the future.
Yeah.
But it certainly feels a lot different than it ever has for me. Now there's been times when, like in the really 2001 to March 2008, we had a cyclical bull move, and then obviously it got hammered going into the fall. But it was more just kind of like a steady rise with some flushes on the COMEX, intermittent flushes on the COMEX. And it back then, and Bill Murphy at GATA kind of coined this term, or it might have been Chris Powell or both of them, they would refer to what was going on, the price rising, as a managed retreat by the COMEX, right? Because if they kept holding it down, it meant that there was going to be a quicker outflow of physical metal from the COMEX and from London. So, but what we're seeing right now feels different from that even. And your arbitrage theory probably has a lot of merit, but let's also keep in mind, I mean, the Chinese, they don't really want to see the price of gold and silver shoot to the moon, right? They're still busy accumulating it. They're converting a lot of fiat currency, particularly dollars, into metal.
Yeah, that's true too.
And same with India. There's a woman on Twitter now who, Manisha Gupta, and she works for the CNBC affiliate over in India. So, you know, when you see that, you hiss. But no, she reports on commodities and gold and silver. And she tweets out very interesting data on India imports intermittently. And the other day, she tweeted the silver imports, which don't necessarily get as much attention as the gold imports flowing into India. And they've already imported, just in the first quarter in India, they've already imported more silver than they did for all of last year. And that has to be accounted for, you know, by the West with actual deliveries. It's not like the Indians say, oh yeah, we'll just leave it in your vaults. You know, I mean, they use it over there. It's they use it for their solar installation program that's going on. That's a national thing. And they you know, and the Indians themselves, the populace, I mean, when gold shoots up in price, they shift to start buying silver. And I think that's what we saw in the first quarter.
Yeah.
So it has to be removed from the vaults in the West, sent to refiners, and shipped over there.
All right. So Dave, we again, just remind everybody, recording this on Thursday in the middle of the day. We can't know where prices are going to close, you know, 4 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. That's still over a day away. However, we do know what happened to gold when it broke out. The range has been going on for 3.5 years, breaks out, closes at 2090 on Friday, March the 1st. And a week later, it was 2200 because everybody saw the breakout. For silver, that level is somewhere north of 29 on the COMEX contract. It's right now, the COMEX contract is recorded as 2993. Anything that begins with a 3, I would think would be a recognizable breakout. So as if people are listening to us, let's just say that that has happened, okay? Somehow, because they've been unable to break it down, COMEX silver finishes the week with a handle that begins with a 3, as does spot. What will that mean to price in the short term?
So you had mentioned you're going to put some charts into the podcast, and I have a chart that I'm putting in my newsletter that actually comes out this afternoon, and I'll send it to you, and you can use it, and I won't be offended if you don't. But what's interesting is, so that 3-year kind of handle on that longer term cup and handle that on gold that broke out, you remember that, right?
Yeah. That's what I'm talking about.
So I show that, and then right below it, you look at silver, and it's almost an identical formation. It's not a clean, it's kind of like a lopsided cup, right? Because we're obviously still well below the all-time high. But in 30 on the front month contract, 30 is kind of the demilitarized zone, or the line in the sand. The formation that we have right now with silver is almost identical to the 3-year formation that broke out with gold. It just hasn't broken out yet. And if it breaks above that, I think we shoot into the mid-30s pretty damn quickly.
Yeah. It's kind of what I'm thinking too.
I didn't, until I looked at this chart I take it back to 2009. Until I looked at this chart, I didn't see the resemblance between that massive cup and handle that broke out with gold and what I'm calling a lopsided cup and handle with silver.
Yep.
And I think because, you know, relative to gold in terms of the amount of derivative shorts the banks have versus the underlying availability to deliver, they're in way worse shape with silver. And that's why I think they're fighting like hell to keep it below 30, because, I mean, if it pops above 30, I really think it's going to be look out above.
Well, you see now why I brought you full circle. Because they know what happens, and they know the damage and the danger they'd be in on a breakout above 30, because every short they've created in the last 12 years or whatever is underwater. But if they don't have pricing power anymore, that puts them in a bit of a bind, Dave.
Oh, they're screwed.
Yeah. So let's watch this. Like I said, I right now, as I record this, it's about noon Eastern on Thursday, and I've got $29.95 for the front month July and $29.72 for spot. We shall see. All right, Dave, last question. Your job primarily is to watch the markets and write your newsletter and manage some money. Regarding your newsletter, specifically the Mining Stock Journal, let's talk about the shares. I'm watching them closely too. 36 GDX is a level that could break price out of what I call the mother of all pennants, a downtrend line that goes all the way back to the 2011 highs. The shares have still not really gotten excited about all this. What do you make of the shares? Will silver drive the shares higher? What's your current thinking?
I think, like, when you're right in the broad sense that the mining stocks haven't gotten excited yet, but stocks like Agnico Eagle, I mean, that thing's up.
Yeah, 3-year highs.
Yeah, I mean, that thing's up 51% since early February.
The Fortuna that you turned me on to is doubled.
Yeah, Fortuna's gotten it. And but again, we're the large caps, like your audience and the people who subscribe to my newsletter, they're most interested in the juniors, right? They want the 5 or 10 baggers. They don't want 50%. And it's that the juniors, the project development microcaps, most of them have not gotten excited yet. But I think it's coming. And I actually write about it in my newsletter today. Because there's some that have started popping, like US Gold, for instance. And that thing is up, oh geez, that's up like 80% or something since mid-February. And they just got approved to build and operate a mine in Wyoming. And so the stock really shot up from there. And it's still dirt cheap relative to its intrinsic value. There's another one, Paramount Gold, that I've been pounding the table on for a long time. And that thing's run just in the last week, excuse me, from the mid-40s to the mid-60s since. And they're getting close to getting an operating permit in Oregon, believe it or not. So, and there's some other juniors. The ones that are looking like they will soon be transitioning into building a mine and producing are starting to move. The ones that are most interesting to me right now, if you can pick the right ones, are the ones that are still advancing their projects and de-risking them, because those are the ones where I think we're going to see 5 or 10 baggers, and even more depending on how high the price of gold and silver go. So, I mean, what we're seeing in the large cap stocks, the producers right now we're seeing, operating leverage, right? Because they've got a certain level of all-in cash costs and all-in sustaining costs. And once the price of gold and silver move above that, almost everything flows to the bottom line. And that's what we're seeing with, like, Fortuna's got a growth component also, but companies like Agnico and the large caps that are moving. I mean, if silver breaks out and gold continues going higher, these penny stocks are just going to go to the moon. And that's when it really gets fun.
Yeah.
And what seems to happen, and I kind of coined this term back in like 2002, 2003, because I'd be sitting here on a portfolio of these junior miners, and like gold and silver were going higher and they wouldn't move. And then one would pop, and a couple of days later, another one would pop. And it was like, it's kind of like watching popcorn pop. You didn't know which
Colonel.
specific kernel was going to pop. You just knew at
Right.
some point they were all going to pop. And that's when
Right.
it really gets fun. And I think that's what we have ahead of us.
Yeah, and I'll
In
be.
terms of the lack of general interest on toward the miners, I think most of the hardcore investors in our segment, and we got whittled down to just the hardcore for a long time. I'm not sure that they necessarily trust this move in gold and silver. And I think the more it sustains and the higher it goes, they're going to start trusting it. And that the ones that are sitting on cash will start putting even more into the sector. But also there's the aspect that, you know, you've got the non-hardcore guys that are chasing tech, right? They're chasing S&P stocks. They're chasing the Mag 7. And that's what they're interested in right now. Meanwhile, they're missing an opportunity on our side. But when the stock market eventually rolls over, I think you're going to start to see a lot of those short-term and intermediate-term traders move into our sector. You'll start to see generalist investment funds move into our sector. We're already starting to see that. There's a couple of financings in the companies that I cover where the CEO told me they had some new investors in their financing that were, you know, generalist funds, not just, you know, the private equity funds that are focused on, you know, the precious metal sector, yeah, or hedge, yeah, funds that invest in the new issues. So we're starting to see that. And I mean, I think at some point you're just going to see a flood of capital move into the mining stocks because they're just so damn cheap relative to everything else. They're cheap relative to gold and silver, but yeah, this, you know, yeah, they're historically cheap. And it's really, I think it's one of the few value plays that we're seeing that's available right now. Everything else is just huge PE ratios, bubble, you know, stock bubble type valuations.
That's the term I've used too. They're not growth anymore, at least not at this point. They're value with a dividend, you know, that sort of thing. Right. Dave, every time it comes up, came up again in a interview I was giving last night, you know, about the mining shares and all this stuff. And I'm like, look, I know just enough to be slightly dangerous from talking to you or talking to Eric, you know, grams per ton over so many meters, you know, and all that kind of jazz. But so that's one thing, you know, there are probably some people out there like me. There's a lot of people out there. They're like, they don't know anything. And they just call their stockbroker and their stockbroker goes, well, let's see, my firm covers Newmont with a hold. So at least my ass is covered if I recommend it. And so they end up getting Newmont. If you're going to be in this sector and you want to get these 5 and 10 bagging, popping kernels, like Dave is talking about, you got to find somebody to help you discern which kernel is going to pop so you don't end up, you know, with a portfolio of old maids like I have. Okay. Remember Orville Redenbacher? Every kernel popped. So you need the Orville Redenbacher of newsletter writers. Dave, I had no idea I was going to say that today.
Me either.
So it could be your name, Dave, on websites, just Orville Redenbacher. Okay. All right. So Orv, tell everybody as we wrap up, because they, again, if you're going to do this, don't do it on your own. Unless you're like a geologist and you know your SHIT, as my wife would say, get some help. Mining Stock Journal, investmentresearchdynamics.com. Mining Stock Journal is Dave's newsletter. Tell everybody how often it comes out. You know, all the other deets.
Sure. So every other Thursday. And I email it out right after the NYSE closed, because I used to mail it out in the morning and I was just like, you know, a lot of the subscribers don't even read it until the weekend.
Yeah.
But for the ones that, you know, like to look at it right away, I don't want them to have a, you know, an advantage during the day that it's released, you know, to get in there and buy the ones that I'm recommending or add or whatever. So, and I usually, what I do is I have some type of opening commentary about the precious metal sector and where I think it's headed and why, what's moving it. And then I do, if the companies that I cover and recommend, if they've had news during the 2 week period, I update that and, you know, reiterate my opinion or mention if it changes. In the last year, I've probably fired two or three stocks and just said, no, these things are, you know, they're dead weight. They're stuck in the mud. They're gone. And then I'm constantly looking for new ideas. Sometimes they come from subscribers. Sometimes I just happen upon them. And If I like it, I'll write it up, talk to management. I try to talk to management as much as possible on the companies I cover. And with the new ideas, I'll debut it in an issue, and then I'll disclose whether or not I own it, or whether or not I'm going to make it a permanent part of my, recommendation portfolio.
So there you go. Put your money where your mouth is there, Orv. But again, this is again, there's thousands of investment newsletters and stuff out there. There are very few that have the expertise to focus on the mining sector. And that Dave does. So if this is something you want to be a part of, if you think gold's going to $3,000 an ounce and silver's going back to 50 and the mining shares are going to go up and you want to maximize your returns, don't just buy the GDX. Don't just buy Newmont. Get some professional help.
Next time.
That's another way to put it. Anyway, my good friend, the Orville Redenbacher of the precious metals sector, Dave Kranzler, has joined us today. And Dave, it's just always great to visit with you. And I thank you very much for your insights and your opinion. They mean a lot to me, so I would suspect they meant a lot to everybody listening. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Craig. I appreciate it.
Okay. And everybody, thank you for listening. Watch that close, man. You close with three handle on silver, front month and spot. Next week's going to be interesting. So check out the close and come back on Monday and we'll see where we go from here. Thanks for listening, everybody, and have a great weekend.